I know what y'all are gonna make in 2021. Hey, what's up, financial advisors? It's your girl, Sarah, and welcome back to my show. On this podcast, we discuss financial advisor lead generation and marketing topics. I am a CFA charter holder, and I used to be a financial advisor, and I am a badass and the best, and I'm better than the rest, so forget about them. Hallelujah. Amen. Financial advisors, don't hide, just smash that subscribe, and let's ride. Hey, what's up, financial advisors? Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I'm going to be talking about how much financial advisors are probably going to be making in 2021. And I'm going to discuss what financial advisor salaries have been stated to be historically, as well as what I see happening in 2021 and for the industry going forward. I'm doing this podcast because it seems like there's just zero clarity about how much money financial advisors and financial planners get paid. I've seen data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics reporting that the median annual wage for financial advisors was $87,850 in May of 2019. What? $87,000 for the median financial advisor's salary? Freaking A! It's a joke. There's no way this represents reality. There wouldn't be hundreds of thousands of people in this role if the job really paid this way. I mean, let's be real. You can make $90,000 teaching first grade in New York City, okay? And you don't have to worry about anybody suing you because you sold 2 shares of some tech stock that popped that you shouldn't have, right? And plus you get the summers off, okay? It's a great job. In other analyses of financial advisor and financial planner salary levels, you can see the link in the blog that's accompanying this podcast. Check it out if you haven't read it already. I explained my skepticism in more depth. I'm just not convinced that the BLS uses the right categories to track this data. I'm not convinced that what they're measuring is what we typically think of as a financial advisor job. I just don't think the BLS has gotten it completely right. And there are other reasons that I just see as more abstract. I just am doubtful that the average financial advisor out there is working for $87,000 a year. I just don't think that people would do it because the level of liability and the licensing and the stresses associated with this job just, right? There wouldn't be demand for this kind of a position if that were true. So the first thing I want to say about financial advisor pay and salaries is that if you were to draw it out in a histogram, I think it would, in a histogram, I passed the CFA, but I barely passed it. I think that the distribution is probably quite lumpy. I don't think it's a normal or uniform statistical distribution. And what that means in plain English is that I think you basically have a lot on the left-hand side of the tail. I think you have a lot of firms that are small. And then on the other side, though, you do have a lot that are just absolutely killing it, but there are far fewer that are in the, I think, 3 billion or above in AUM. And yes, I am still measuring it by AUM. And I know that there's all kinds of changes that are going on. Listen to my Bob Veras podcast if you haven't heard this yet. But I do see that there are some changes in the industry. However, I do maintain that I think this is still, we are still in the AUM, fee for AUM or commission driven model. Sorry. When I see it, then I'll believe it, but I don't see it yet. I don't really see the changes taking place just yet. So this was interesting. DeVoe and Company, not Bell Biv DeVoe, but Dave DeVoe, according to an RIA Biz article, stated that 2/3 of RIA firms are managing less than $100 million. And the median amount is $38 million. What? Yeah. So as you can see, the tail is just way, goes way out on the left. And the thing is, we don't really know because I just think that this whole thing is not clear. There's not really reliable data on this. in investment management, the CFA Institute does a great job publishing a compensation study annually that tracks the salary levels for analysts and portfolio managers and people that are typically managing money. I think they do a great job. However, I've never seen a study or heard of a study, and I could be wrong about this. Let me know if I'm wrong. I've been wrong before and I'm wrong a lot, but I just don't see that there's such a popular study conducted by the CFP board or the FPA. It's probably because they're busy organizing all their conferences. Did I say that? I am the bad girl. I mean, I tell y'all I'm the badass, but I mean, I'm the badass and this is what the badass says, right? I say stuff like that. Anyways, I mean, I was never going to be able to be a speaker at their conferences anyways, because I'm too much of a... So we really have to rely on sources such as the SEC and FINRA data. And this data is hard to decipher for mere mortals like me, given how fragmented the landscape is. Like I just said, the data is sparse and it's hard to distill down into figures that make sense. And I think you would really need to devote a lot of time and attention, more time and attention than I have at my disposal, to be able to make sense of the data that's published out there by the regulators. So here's my heuristic take. I would just say that the $87,000 is more like what an entry level or junior advisor or planner would probably be making, somebody with 1 to 3 years of experience. This is what you should be expecting to earn while you're building your book of business. So the question of what does a junior advisor or entry level financial advisor make? I think that is what this data is answering. Most financial advisors and planners that I know who have become established are earning 100, 120, probably more like 150 to 300 on the regular when they really get into it. And then of course, there are the really successful ones who are making 500,000 or more a year. But like I'm saying with the data, I don't really feel like the, you know, earning really, the ones that are really, really earning like that, I don't really think that that's the norm. I think that that's definitely more in the outlier tail to the right in the histogram. And again, these are just my assumptions based on my experience and talking to my clients and what I know about being in the industry. I mean, is this good money? It's okay. But let's talk not about what the salary levels are, but let's talk about what they're likely to be in the future in 2021 and going forward. Before we get into that, I just want to ask all of you listening to this podcast, have you purchased 47 financial advisor LinkedIn messages that won't make you look stupid? Because this is a book that's really, that I wrote, by the way. The link is also in the blog to this podcast. And it's really made a difference for a lot of people. The reason is that all of the messages in this book are 2 sentences or shorter. And I really pained over it to make sure that these messages were not the typical financial advisor speak. And it seems like it's working from the feedback that I'm getting on the book. So the other thing is, if you've been enjoying my podcast, I would appreciate it if you would support my work by purchasing one of my eBooks or maybe even joining my membership. And the link to that is also in the blog. So let's get into it. What factors actually drive financial advisor salaries? There are a few of them, some more than others. At this point, I think that the following factors are still the most influential: how much the stock market rises or falls, the net profit margin of your practice, demand for financial planning, investment management, and other services that financial advisors and planners provide, and the level and fees that you charge. So let's look at each of these and what I think they're going to be in 2021. Now, I was reading an article that Goldman Sachs was saying that the S&P is expected to rise by 14% in 2021. Right. I mean, it's a prediction that they made and nobody has a crystal ball, but let's just assume that the vaccine works and life returns to normal-ish. It's not inconceivable to see the market perform this way. But what does that actually mean? What does market movement translate into in terms of financial advisor salaries? There was an article in RA Intel in which Dan Sievert of Echelon Partners claimed that the revenue at RIA firm typically falls by 2/3 of what the market does when the market falls. So by the same reasoning, let's say the market were to rise by this 14% that Goldman's saying, we'd be looking at revenue at RIA firms rising by about 9%. Now, RIA firms are different animals than broker-dealer firms or hybrids. And I'm going to get into it later, but not every firm charges like the typical RIA firm, and that's a factor too. But let's just say that, and these are very broad brush strokes here that I'm painting, without getting too technical, let's just say that the market were to rise by 14%, we'd be looking at revenue at RIA firms rising by about 9%. Profit margins. Now, I'm going to say something insulting, but if you haven't guessed, you know, nothing too much gets past the badass here, that I think a lot of y'all financial advisors just don't know what actually a profit margin is. Yeah, I said it. The operating profit margin for a company is a company's operating income divided by its sales. You take your revenue, subtract out the cost of sales, which includes salaries and all the costs that go into delivering your services. But you don't take out taxes and you don't take out interest. And I know interest really isn't such a big thing for most of you, but if you were to take out the taxes and the interest, that would leave you with the net profit margin, which is essentially the bottom line. But let's just talk about operating profit margin. So there was a study done by Schwab Advisor Services in 2019, and it said that within RIA firms, RIAs with 100 to 250 million in AUM had profit margins that were slightly south of 29% in 2018. This also lines up with, in my experience, what I've seen as a service provider to many of these firms. It's not awesome. I think it could be better. And I'm going to tell you about why I think it is actually going to be getting better in the future. Let's think about what the greatest expenses on your income statement are. For most wealth management firms, it's staff, rent, and capital equipment. Now, here's what the pandemic has done. It's forced us into a virtual service model. And I think that it's here to stay. I think that once life returns to quote unquote normal, when the vaccine kicks in, I think that this kind of brick and mortar infrastructure model that we have seen in the past with wealth management firms, I think that that's going to remain out of favor. If you think about it, if you can go and get a lead over LinkedIn instead of going out to a networking function, and then you can talk with that person over Zoom instead of having to go to their office five times or having them get all dressed up, come in the car to meet you, battle traffic, and get home just in time before the daycare closes, right? All of that stress associated with meeting in person. If they could do that, then I think people would be more likely to do that, okay? If you're the owner of an RIA firm with employees, I mean, what are you thinking about this? Are you really going to be wanting to lease out this whole office when all your employees have been home for about a year? They're used to the flexibility that comes with virtual work. They've changed their schedules. And I mean, from what I've seen, people are just as productive using the DocuSign, the LinkedIn, the Zoom, all the other technologies that have now become the ones that we're more comfortable using. Like, it's been long enough that we've been doing this that we're comfortable with, okay, we got to use DocuSign. We don't need to fax and file and send papers in the mail and have the client come for an in-person signing. They can DocuSign it now. They've learned DocuSign, we've learned DocuSign, right? All of this stuff, the paper-mongering, asset-heavy office, I think, is a thing of the past. And now I know some of y'all are going to be real stubborn about it and going to want to go back to that life, but I just think that if you could run your firm from your cell phone, I mean, why wouldn't you continue to do that? I think it would be a very difficult decision to want to go back. It's also a question of what your employees would want. You know, I've got kids, right? And if I'm used to working for you, if I'm your employee and I'm used to working for you over Zoom and not having to go into the office, and, you know, I've got the ability now to go and pick up my kids instead of having to have them go into daycare, and they can be with me in the afternoon after they're done with school instead of having to go pay $200 per kid per week to have them in daycare and then after school program that they hate and that I hate because it costs so much money. Like, I mean, are your employees going to want to go back to this too? Are your employees going to want to go back to always being in an office? I know this sounds crazy, but I just don't see the typical office setup coming back into favor. I don't. And I wrote an article about this about a year ago about how people should not be having conference rooms, how you should get rid of the conference room in your office. I wrote this in Advisor Perspectives, and I remember that nobody believed me. Nobody likes the article. Everybody thought the idea was ludicrous. People were laughing at me. Like, there was one guy who posted up on AP Viewpoint and he's like, Sarah, he's like, you know, I like your articles and I think you're on point with most of the stuff that you say, but not this time. I mean, it was like I was a complete pariah with this topic. But yet, as soon as the pandemic hit, people were like, you know, now the idea is like they can't go virtual fast enough. I, again, am maintaining that I just don't see how, from a profit margin perspective, many firms are going to look at what their margins could be if they moved to this asset light model or they kept things the way that they are. I don't see how it would make sense for them financially to go back from a profit margin perspective. Is this going to hit in 2021? I don't know. I mean, are leases expiring? Have they already expired? Are people not renewing them? I don't know. I don't think there's conclusive enough data, but I would say that going forward in the future, as we move to this asset light model, I would look to see profit margins improving. Now, there's also a question of what's the demand for the services that y'all provide as financial advisors? Is that going to be higher in 2021? And I guess it's just a bigger question of, are the services that FAs provide going to be more or less valuable in this pandemic type of an environment? So there was another article I was reading in Think Advisor. I was reading a lot, y'all. I've been citing articles. I don't normally do that. Anyways, I was reading this article in Think Advisor, and it was saying that there was some data from Kiplinger saying that 93% of investors in the US have less than $1 million to invest. And so that if that's true, I just don't know how demand really would be rising in a pandemic. The market in 2020 didn't go down. Well, it went down for one day, but then it roared back. And a volatile or a bear market, I think, creates opportunity for high value advisors that are more attentive to their clients to take some of those high net worth clients away from those who haven't done as good a job and who haven't provided the value-adding services. But these are all people that can pay for a financial advisor. When you have a pandemic like this, when people are getting laid off or can't work because they have to be home taking up care of dependents, et cetera, or they lost their business, I just don't see how those people are going to be running out the door. And none of us are running out the door anyways, because we're all on lockdown. I don't see a lot of these emerging or semi-affluent people eager to shell out $4,000 for a financial plan or to chalk up $10,000 a year from the IRA that they're now having to tap in order to pay next month's rent. Now, the last factor is how financial advisors actually get paid. Industry experts are saying that there's going to be a move to flatter hourly fees, but there doesn't seem to be any conclusive evidence that this shift has already occurred. When I start seeing Cerulli headlines, then I'll believe it. However, for now, I just don't. The other thing is everyone's talking about fee compression. I mean, I remember back when I was an advisor, I was charging people 1%. And I think 1% was pretty much the industry standard at that point. And now I'm seeing it more 75 basis points. I mean, that's not such free fee compression. And I don't know why the pandemic would accelerate the speed of fee compression. In fact, I think if anything, it would slow it down. Financial advisor compensation levels do matter. How much you make as an advisor does matter. And all of these factors that I cited are essentially factors that are out of your control. But what is within your control is the quality of your prospecting. If you're looking to learn how to use LinkedIn, specifically LinkedIn Messenger, I, again, have a book called 47 Financial Advisor, LinkedIn Messages That Will Not Make You Look Stupid. This was written exclusively for financial advisors. And each message is two sentences or shorter. I also have a membership in which you can learn how to use social media for prospecting. That is linked also in the blog. I also have an ebook about financial advisor marketing plans. This is a template that will provide you with a structure for how to organize your marketing efforts in 2021 and going forward. That link is also included in the blog. So thank you all for joining me today. I am Sarah Grillo, and I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Let me know if you have any questions on my financial advisor salary outlook for 2021.